John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily, and the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
In a hospital room at Brigham and Women's Hospital, days after the killings, Lindsay Clancy used psychologist Paul Zazale's cell phone to call her husband, Patrick. She had been unable to speak when she first arrived at South Shore Hospital. Reddington had needed a court order to get Zazale into the room at Brigham and Women's. Clancy was being guarded by state police. A defense psychologist was the first person outside law enforcement allowed in. She told Patrick she heard voices the night she killed their children. That phone call is now the foundation of the defense's theory that Clancy was in the grip of postpartum psychosis when Cora, Dawson, and Callan died. On day 12 of the trial at Plymouth Superior Court, the state police sergeant told the jury that the lead detective on the case had speculated Zazale coached Clancy to say it. Ooh, it was all a coaching job. Couldn't possibly be real. No, because the witch trial of Lindsay Clancy prevents people from actually using their brains and understanding mental health and psychological conditions, postpartum psychosis, women's mental health, psychology. You know those sort of things that play a big part in how we act and how we treat one another and how we function from day to day. It's either you're a good person, you got nothing wrong with you, or you're a witch. Welcome to Massachusetts. The same sergeant confirmed there was no investigative basis for that speculation. What the prosecution hasn't shown after 12 days of testimony is any evidence that someone told Lindsay Clancy to claim she heard voices. She's already been telling providers for months she's having intrusive thoughts. They just didn't ask any more questions. What do those intrusive thoughts sound like to you, look like to you? What exactly are you experiencing? Because the word intrusive thoughts is kind of a broad spectrum to be talking about in terms of your mental health. Why didn't she explain more? She should have known to explain. No, maybe the doctor should have asked a question. Maybe that's their job. Maybe that's a failure on their part for not going a little bit further. And the fact that she heard voices in her head, and we finally get to that after she's done this horrific thing, doesn't mean it wasn't happening before. In fact, it really sounds like it was. It's just the doctors weren't following up enough to get that answer. But why would you want to get to the answer when you're in Massachusetts, when it's much easier, so much easier to just say, you know what? She's a witch, without actually calling her a witch. Because that's essentially, this is a witch trial. Not a lot has changed in Massachusetts over the years. Sergeant Daniel Lauer has worked for Massachusetts State Police for 9 years. On the night of the killings, he responded to South Shore Hospital in Weymouth. Clancy had visible injuries and couldn't speak. Lauer collected her clothing, including a blood-stained black tank top and jeans, along with her wedding ring. He served the hospital a notice to preserve her blood and urine samples until investigators could actually obtain a warrant. This is one of those cases where the investigation was done. They checked the boxes. They crossed the T's. They dotted the I's. It's just the state of Massachusetts didn't like their answers. They didn't like that it pointed towards a woman in distress, a woman with postpartum psychosis, a woman that had been begging for help forever. You pesky police doing your jobs, darn it. Now, why it is that the prosecutor, the DA in the state of Massachusetts wants to burn this woman at a stake like a witch, I do not know the answer to that question. But maybe just maybe, this new tourism video from Massachusetts might give us the answer to that question.
Massachusetts, where history still comes alive. Looking for a place where the authorities don't let science get in the way of a good story? You'll feel right at home. Since 1692, Massachusetts has been the nation's leader in skipping the facts and going straight to the verdict. 13 medications in 4 months? A psychiatric hospital stay? A journal full of cries for help? It doesn't matter. If we can't understand it, you must have planned it. It's not a bug. It's a tradition.
My great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather helped rid Salem of its witches. Every single day, I carry on that fight. Back then, we called them witches. Now we just call them Lindsay Clancy. Either way, we get the job done.
And while you're here, meet the locals. Our online community is home to some of the most dedicated investigators in the country. They don't need medical records. They don't need a degree. They watched a 45-second video, and they just know. The husband? Suspicious. Was he at CVS? Sure. Did he call 911 screaming? Technically. But does that feel right? Here in Massachusetts, we don't let details get in the way of a perfectly good theory. You'll find people who've already solved a case the actual jury hasn't finished hearing yet. That's not arrogance. That's efficiency. And really, why would you waste time understanding postpartum psychosis when you could just decide she's evil and get on with your day? Massachusetts, where we've been wrong about women for over 300 years and never been more confident. Visit soon. Stay as long as you like. Just don't get sick. Around here, a breakdown and a broomstick are still the same thing.
Does this make you wish you had a summer vacation out there? I know, summer's almost over, and you're like, damn, I could have gone to Massachusetts where a broomstick and a breakdown are still the same thing. From South Shore, Lauer went to Boston Children's Hospital to check on 8-month-old Callan's status. He was later posted outside Clancy's room at Brigham and Women's, where she had been transferred to stand guard. Zeisel entered the room. Lawyer stayed in the Lawler stayed in the hallway. He testified he did not hear any conversation between the psychologist and Clancy, and he did not hear the phone call she made to Patrick. Patrick Clancy had testified earlier in the trial that Lindsay called him from the hospital and told him she heard a voice compelling her to do what she did. Her testimony established that claim. Or his testimony established that claim. What Day 12 addressed was whether the claim was coached. Because it couldn't have possibly come from her. It couldn't have been true. No, it had been coached. It came from somewhere else. It can't possibly be this horrific medical condition that all these doctors say she had. It can't be that, because that means our theory is totally wrong and we look like a bunch of people prosecuting a witch. It was really a woman that was going through postpartum psychosis and having the worst moments anyone could ever have. So why are we doing this? Why are we processing? We don't ever get there. We don't get to the questioning of why we're doing this or how unjust or insane this whole thing is. No. Just go, well, if it doesn't agree with our facts, let's say it's not real. It was coached. It was fake. It was something else. It was a witch. Reddington's question that triggered the fight asked whether it was a contention of the district attorney's that Zeisel told Clancy to call Patrick and tell him she heard voices. The prosecution objected. Judge William Sullivan called attorneys to the sidebar, and after 20 minutes, he sent the jury out of the courtroom. With the jury gone, Lawler was questioned under voir dire. Reddington established that Lawler had collaborated with prosecutors preparing for trial. He confirmed Lawler later learned from lead state police detective Josh McKelligan that Clancy had used Zeisel's phone. McKelligan speculated to Lawler that Zeisel was the reason Clancy told her husband she heard voices. The theory was that the defense psychologist encouraged her to make the call. Let's get way ahead of this. Let's think about the trial that's coming up. I know, I don't know you well, but let's get on your side. Let's put my entire credentials, my entire life, my work on the line. For you, Lindsay Clancy, who I barely know, but I'm willing to put it all out there to coach you to say something that you're not really believing for a trial that I don't know is going to happen. Yeah, that's how it went down, Massachusetts. When the jury returned, Reddington asked Lawler directly, did he and McKelligan discuss the theory that Zeisel is the reason that she told her husband she heard voices? Lawler confirmed they had. There's no investigative basis for that. That's McKellen's speculation, correct? Reddington asked. Lawler said that was correct. It was the speculation. Wah, wah. Sorry. Sorry, Massachusetts, your theory just got run over. Prosecutor Shannon Buckingham, with her giant bow, pushed back on redirect. Lawler never discussed the theory with prosecutors. The speculation came from a conversation with a fellow trooper, not from the DA's office. Oh, well, still, not directly from the actual person. Her redirect lasted approximately 10 minutes. Buckingham established that investigators routinely talk about theories as cases unfold and that those theories change over time. And theories are fine to have. It's just, it's not okay when the theory then gets translated into here's exactly what happened. And I am basing the things that I've conjured up in my brain as part of the actual timeline. Let me present it to you as fact. Lawler confirmed he didn't hear anything that happened inside Clancy's hospital room while Zeisel was there. So they could have had a conversation about kittens and how wonderful it is that clumping litter exists. Well, that sounds absurd. Why would they be talking about that? Well, it sounds about as absurd as the psychologist going, make up the story. The contested question, whose theory is this? And a theory is not a fact. Reddington framed it as a prosecution contention. Lawler attributed to McKelligan alone. It came from somewhere. The theory. It's just not based in reality. Buckingham denied it was the prosecution's position. The jury heard all three versions. Earlier in the morning, Duxbury Police Corporal Daly testified briefly about responding to the scene the night of the killings. He arrived in uniform carrying his service weapon. Reddington asked on cross-examination, you were going to, what, guard the woman that was tied to the bed? Daly's testimony was finished before the lunch break. After Lawler stepped down, the prosecution called Letitia Duke. She's a licensed mental health counselor who worked at the same South Shore Health patient perinatal clinic where Joletta and Julie Paul treated Clancy. She met with Clancy four times, starting December 2nd and 22. Clancy's presenting concerns at the first visit, lack of sleep, depression symptoms, and frequent passive ideation. Dukes testified the ideation involved thoughts of wanting to die, no longer wanting to be here. Passive ideation means having thoughts of death without a specific plan or method. Clancy reported those thoughts to Dukes, but never said she had a plan to end her life or hurt anyone else. She also told Dukes she had anxiety that something would happen to her children. Fear, underlying fear that something would happen to them. Dukes diagnosed postpartum anxiety because Clancy's anxiety was not generalized, but focused on specific fears. You know, things that might have been able to be done had her doctors before all this happened asked a few more questions. Oh, wait, there's no drop-down menu for that, isn't there, Dr. Tufts? Jesus. She testified that Clancy showed no signs of psychosis or mania at any of the four visits. She had no concerns about Clancy's physical safety or the safety of anyone in her presence. Unlike Joletta, Dukes was never asked about bipolar diagnosis. She worked closely with Rebecca Joletta, the psychiatric nurse practitioner who testified on day 11. Dukes was the fourth treating provider to tell the jury she didn't see postpartum psychosis in Lindsay Clancy. She never saw Clancy again after December 19th, 5 weeks before the killings. On cross-examination, Reddington pointed to the clinical note Dukes wrote after her final visit with Clancy on December 19th. The note described Clancy as laughing and appearing in better spirits. It also said Clancy seemed more engaged than in prior sessions, but the same note reads, "Patient continues to have low mood and numbness." Reddington asked Dukes, was she laughing when she had numbness? Dukes said the laughter was a reaction to part of their conversation, not a reflection of her overall state. Dukes was on the stand for approximately 2 hours. She stepped down just before the lunch recess. Six witnesses testified on day 12 in total. Lawler, Daly, Dukes, and three afternoon witnesses, including the two medical examiners. After 11 days focused on Clancy's mental health treatment, prosecutors shifted the trial to the three children. Dr. Renee Stonebridge, the director of cardiac and neuropathology at the state chief medical examiner's office in Boston, took the stand next. Stonebridge testified she found injuries to both Cora and Dawson consistent with asphyxial events. She said both children had injuries to their eyes. She testified it takes between 6 and 8 minutes of oxygen deprivation for brain death to occur. Direct examination lasted under 10 minutes. Reddington did not cross-examine her. Dr. Barbara Olson followed Stonebridge. She testified about the external examination findings. She confirmed that evidence on Dawson appeared more prominent than on Cora, which she could indicate moments of struggling or changes to pressure. Reddington raised several objections during Olson's testimony as prosecutors asked further questions about variables that would affect the timeline of oxygen deprivation. All things. No one is disputing here. No one's disputing whether or not she did it. They're just saying, yes, she was in a state of psychosis when this was happening. It's horrible. She's horrified. Everyone is horrified by this. But the ghoul that wears a bow and calls herself a prosecutor thought, you know what? We're going to be really ghoulish today. We're going to go on full ghoul mode. And if she played with the Ouija board and sat in the center of a pentagram the night before going, give me the strength to be the ghoul you need me to be today. As she ties the bow in her hair. Reddington did not cross-examine Olson. She finished her testimony around 4 in the afternoon and Sullivan sent the jury home for the day. Both medical examiners testified and left the stand without a single defense question. Both sides had previously agreed the jury could accept certain facts about the killings without live testimony. Prosecutors insisted on presenting the medical evidence to support the extreme cruelty element of the first-degree murder charges. Under Massachusetts law, extreme cruelty is one of the theories that prosecution can use to establish first-degree murder, providing it requires showing the manner of death involving prolonged suffering. The 6 to 8 minute timeline for brain death established through Stonebridge's testimony serves that argument directly. Lindsay Clancy broke down during the medical examiner testimony. Judge Sullivan cleared the courtroom after Clancy was heard saying, "I can't do this." Two nurses escorted her from the room in her wheelchair. Her father was in tears. The bitch with the bow was just like, "It's working." Sullivan called multiple recesses before testimony resumed. He reminded jurors the verdict must be based on evidence, not on sympathy or anger or passion or prejudice. But again, we're talking about Massachusetts here. Broomsticks seem to be more in line with understanding than mental health. The jury watched the defense attorney hear the medical evidence and let it stand. Reddington spent the morning dismantling the coaching theory and the afternoon in silence. The prosecution's case is nearing its close. Sullivan told attorneys the trial is well on schedule and somewhat ahead of schedule. If convicted of first-degree murder, Clancy faces life in prison without parole. If the jury finds she was not criminally responsible, she will be committed to a state psychiatric hospital. When the defense begins, the voices Lindsey Clancy described to Patrick from Zeisel's phone will be at the center of everything. The prosecution spent 12 days showing that jury that no provider saw psychosis and that the manner of death was prolonged. Reddington has spent 12 days showing the jury that no provider had the full picture and that the coaching theory has no evidence behind it. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. I tell you, this is a case, I did not expect it to go down some of the paths that it has. The conspiracy route is the one that shocked me most of Patrick and people going down that one based on little to nothing, but other than conjecture and TikToks. Like, it's a very easily debunkable. I mean, there's a lot of theories out there. There's a lot of conspiracy theories. I look at it and go, maybe there's something to this. This one? Huh? I don't know, I'm baffled by it. I'm baffled by it in so many ways. And I don't know why, but I'm still surprised every time that in 2026 we have this much difficulty in the United States of America understanding and accepting the complexities of mental health and an unhealthy brain and all the places that a brain can take someone. Even when the evidence is there, even when everything points to, here's the recipe for how this could happen. And it's just clear as day as to how something, and it's still la, la, la. We don't want to hear it. It's too icky. Why, you know, why bother our minds with understanding someone else's pain when we can just partake in our pleasure over here? It's pretty sick. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue it right there. If you want to get access and listen to the trial, we've been posting all of the testimony every single day as it's happening on our podcast feed. That's the QR code right there. If you're watching us on YouTube, follow that. It will take you to whatever podcast player you so prefer. Hit subscribe to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. If you don't want to use a QR code, just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi wherever you get podcasts, and you will find us, and you'll get all of our commentary and the courtroom audio as well. Check it out. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.